Hi guys, welcome back to Wildest Kruger Stories. I'm Craig.
And I'm Carolina.
For those of you who don't know, we're a podcast series covering wildlife conservation and some pretty epic stories. Oh, I forgot to say photography in that one, but photography mainly.
Yeah, we do talk about photography as well and some epic stories. And we are bringing you some epic stories this episode because we have just gotten back from our trip to Kalahari and southern Namibia with two clients from America. And we have some crazy stories to tell you. And we're not just going to tell it ourselves because we have invited on our two guests to tell you the stories directly from the source.
So just to give some background to you who don't know or didn't know about what we were doing with this trip, we took two clients for just under 3 weeks. We traveled through the Kalahari, then we cut across out of Mata Mata border post, and then we stopped off at Aus to see the wild horses, moved on to Luderitz, Coleman's Kop, where the ghost town where the ghost town is. Or Coleman's Kop is the ghost town. And then from there, we went down to Fish River Canyon and then finally Achrabi's Falls. It was an insane trip. We traveled just over 4,300 kilometers in total. That obviously includes game drives. It was amazing.
Yeah, and obviously very, very wild as well because we did something we usually do not do. We were camping with our guests. And yeah, that was very, very special, something very new and very wild. And that definitely brought some crazy cool stories that you'll hear just now.
Perfect, guys. Enough from us. Let's dive straight into the interviews with Charles and Jackie.
Hope you guys enjoy this one.
Charles, Jackie, you guys are all the way back in the States now. Welcome. Thanks so much for coming on to Wildest Kruger Stories. We really appreciate your time. And I'm just going to fill all of our listeners in is we have just returned from a 3 week trip in the pretty much Kalahari Desert or Kalahari Transfrontier National Park and Namibia. And we thought our listeners would love to hear how you guys enjoyed this trip or how you felt about this trip. Welcome, guys. Charles, I think let's start with you.
Hi, I'm Charles. I'm from New York.
And I'm Jackie, and I also live in New York State.
Yeah, thanks guys for joining us on the podcast. Just for also to introduce you guys a little bit, I'm thinking, could you tell us a little bit about like how long have you been into like wildlife photography and like when was your first safari and how did you end up booking this crazy trip with us? Because this was definitely a very unique trip. Tell the listeners a little bit about that. We can start with Charles.
So my first like experience with wildlife photography at all was actually going to the Serengeti with Carolina. And so like the genesis of this whole trip was like we had such a phenomenal time on that particular trip, and like we got along so well that towards the end of the trip we were like, okay, we got to do something else. Like, let's talk about it. And Carolina tossed out this crazy idea about the Kalahari, and we like made it happen like 17 months later.
Yeah, no, it's been a wild ride since then. Yeah, Jackie, how about you?
Similar to Charles, my first safari was with you in the Serengeti, which was such a phenomenal experience, and I was so excited when we talked about the possibility of doing it again. And then when the ideas came up of, are we going to go camping and it's going to be a longer trip, that was even more exciting.
Jax, I have a follow-up question for you, just with regards to us getting into this. And you told a phenomenal story about your first day that I found absolutely hilarious. When the first time you got into Lake Manyara National Park, or was it Lake
Yeah.
Manyara, and you felt overwhelmed by photography, and that's when you felt really connected. Could you potentially elaborate on the story that I'm talking about?
So our first animal sighting in Lake Manyara was elephants that were passing very closely in front of our vehicle. And there was no angle, like there was no photography angle, but I'm sitting there thinking, oh my gosh, is this what this is going to be like? Like, I'm not prepared for this. I'm not getting any shots. Like, I'm just, I don't know about this. And then the next sightings were better and better, and they're more, you know, photogenic. And I thought, oh, good. I felt so relieved.
when you spoke to me about that, when you told that story about how that actually transpired, I found it quite hilarious. With regards, you were like, I shouldn't be here. This is I'm not. Everyone else is clicking away, and I'm just here.
But I think that's the thing, though. I love that because I remember that sighting so specifically because it's one of those where, like, when everyone sees their first elephant, like, that's obviously a very special moment. You know, it's an incredible animal to see. And as anyone who has been on safari, and especially anyone who's done wildlife photography, knows is that not every sighting is going to be photographic. And sometimes I think when you come on safari the first time, you think that, like, oh, I'm a bad photographer because I'm not getting a good shot from this specific sighting. Like, I, as a good photographer, should be able to get a good shot at every single sighting. And that's not the case. Like, sometimes it's just the angles are just not there. The light is just not there. And sometimes it's just about, okay, I'm not going to get a good photo here. I just need to enjoy the moment. But when it's your first elephant, you want to, like, capture that moment and capture the feeling of seeing this incredible animal. And you just panic and you're like, how do I capture this? I can't get these photos that I imagined. And then you also kind of think that because it's your first elephant, you're probably thinking that you're not going to see any other, like, you're not going to have another shot at photographing an elephant. And then a few days later on safari, you realize, okay, I'm going to see quite a few more elephants, like, it'll be fine.
Yeah, exactly. I remember thinking, what do I do with this elephant that's 6 feet from my face? You know, I mean, I'm going to take some texture shots. I'm looking around and everyone else is photographing. And then after the sighting, they're all saying, oh, we didn't get anything. That, and I was thinking, oh, phew. Then a couple of days later, we had lunch with elephants. So it was good.
Yes.
And Charles, what was your feeling? Yeah, go ahead.
That same sighting, not only did I fill up a memory card out of sheer panic, I'm pretty sure I looked at Carolina afterwards and I was like, if I see nothing else on this trip, I'm happy. Like, that was my level of expectations.
So
I remember that.
I'll never forget Carolina, and we've chatted about this extensively. I think even between us four. When Carolina phoned me the night you guys had just gone through Lake Manyara National Park, and she said to me, she's like, Greg, and it was one of her first, like, photography trips that she had done. When she was teaching, and she said, Craig, I've never seen people get so excited about elephants. And it was, you can see this trip is going to be amazing, and these people are amazing, because we had our first elephant sighting and everyone went absolutely ballistic.
that was pretty much it.
But it's normal. It's so normal for anyone, any first timer, and it just shows you that is what happens. You go absolutely, because you don't know if you're going to see something like that again, and it is that real and that amazing.
Yeah. So obviously, moving on from that trip, because I think this podcast is about the trip that we've just done, and there is a podcast episode about this trip to Tanzania far back in our podcast history. No, it must be a little bit like
episode 10 or something. Jackie and I weren't on it.
That's true. But we have you guys here to talk about more crazy trip, though. Sorry, Jackie.
Jackie wants to do one of Tanzania.
We're gonna have to do it.
We'll have to redo it. But we want to talk about this crazy trip that we've just been on, because we have spoken on the podcast before in previous episodes about us going on this trip and kind of building it up, and then and also saying that this is a very, very unique trip that we're doing, because usually we will stay at lodges or we'll stay at, like, self-catering places in the Kruger usually, but in other parts of Africa as well. But we're very Kruger based, but this trip was very unique because we went camping, and we went camping in the middle of nowhere in Botswana, where there's literally nothing. And I just want to know from your guys' perspective, like, what was your expectations? Like, what were you expecting going on this trip? Because we really tried to give you as good of an explanation of what we were doing. But I think, you know, you can never really explain what it's actually going to be like. And was, like, did the expectations meet the reality, or what was the reality of, like, camping in the middle of nowhere in Africa? What was that like?
You know, I listened to quite a few podcasts leading up to this trip, about the Kalahari Desert, and most of them, when they would talk about the vastness of the desert, would say there's nothing there, but in the sense of nothing. Like, imagine nothing and then take away everything that you're still imagining, and that's exactly what you're going to find there. And it was wonderful. I think I was more nervous for the trip than I needed to be, just leading up to it. This was actually my first time camping kind of off the grid. In the past, when I've camped, I've done car camping or hiked into a place where we could easily access a boat if we needed to get somewhere for safety. So I was a little nervous, but expectations were far exceeded, and I had a really great time.
Charles, how about you?
I would say it kind of met expectations. Like Jackie, I'd done a bunch of research, and I'd like watched a bunch of YouTube videos about like people, you know, camping in the Kalahari or whatever. So I had that expectation. The part that I didn't fully appreciate was like, you have no contact with the outside world. And that was glorious, right? I like actually detoxed from my phone. It was like phenomenal. Like coming back has been tough as a result of that, but like totally worth it. I did have a little more experience on like camping because I regularly do like backpacking trips and everything. But I'm actually more nervous about those because bears will, if you like leave something smellable in your tent, they'll get in. And this, I like had none of that fear. So this was actually easier for me.
Yeah. In general, I mean, animals out there, they'll come through, but they don't view the tent or vehicle as anything they want to get into. It's almost just a structure to them, and they'll bypass, but will never really interact. Yeah. Really, it does happen, but not often.
They kind of put it in the same category as like a rock or a bush or something. Yeah. Like, you know, sometimes they will
just a talking there's videos. Rock.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's videos of lions licking the dew off tents in the Kalahari because they just trying to get the moisture in the water from the dew, and they're not trying to get into the tent because they don't associate that with food. While, as you said, in America with bears and stuff, it's a little bit more of you have to be a little bit more wary of bears potentially trying to get into the tents to get food and stuff. But tell us about what was it like that first night? We had rooftop tents for those who maybe don't know that. For you guys, and then me and Craig had a tent on the ground, and it was the rooftop tents was one because it's very convenient, but also to kind of, you know, ease your nerves a little bit so that you're not on the ground, like in case something would come through, you up on the top of the roof, like it feels a little bit more safe. What was it like that first night in the rooftop tents? Tell us about that.
It was the best night of sleep I'd had in a long time. Like, I expected to be a little bit nervous or whatever. Like, no, I just like zipped up in this like enclosed space that I knew was like bug free and everything, and I just crashed. It was beautiful.
Yeah, great night's sleep for me as well. Great night's sleep, and completely agree with feeling really safe in the tent because I know it had been zipped up all day, and it's my little safe area. Was certainly an adjustment. The first night, just, you know, getting my routine in place and what do I need to take into the tent with me, and what's my plan if I need to go to the bathroom in the night. But after that first night, it was smooth sailing.
Yeah, because I think you guys were mentioning the tents being zipped up all day, because I think the biggest worry that we were all most nervous about, myself included, was like snakes and scorpions. Am I right?
Yeah. And I got up a couple times in the night while we were camping, and I never saw a snake or scorpion in the night. So
yeah, the funniest thing was actually that we had kind of like, you know, given you guys a bit of a safety briefing, and we were talking about like it's really important that you shine wherever you go at night because, you know, snakes and scorpions, and we just need to be very careful of not stepping on them and so on. And I also was a little bit nervous about snakes and scorpions because I don't like them. And I was also like shining everywhere, I was kind of expecting there to be quite a lot of, especially scorpions, but we ended up not seeing a single scorpion until the last day of camping. And then I was like, okay, Jackie, come here. You must see the scorpion because we promised you that you're going to see a scorpion. And it was under our tent when we were packing up. So it was actually never an issue.
Yeah, which was great. But you know, the briefing was great, and we were prepared and knew to look around anytime we got up, and it was good.
No, I'm glad. Okay, so camping was obviously an experience. It was very new and very different. But let's move on to like Kalahari as a whole. We didn't camp the whole time. We did stay at some of the, like, what do you call them? Like structures, some safari tents and some like small houses, I guess you call them. Like wooden houses.
Yeah, cottages.
Cottages. Yeah. And yeah, so tell us about like Kalahari as a whole, and then we'll move over to Namibia, the Namibian part just now. What was your guys's like highlight of the Kalahari trip?
In terms of sightings or just experience?
Both.
Or the park itself. Go ahead, Jackie, unless you want me to go.
I think two things stand out. The one night where we think maybe it was a jackal who came and messed with the water tap. Just because it's so different. I mean, it kind of goes back to these animals we're in their space and they're running around our camp and they're aware that we have food and resources. And so I woke up around 4 a.m. to this sound, and you know, I'm thinking I'm in this new place. I don't know all the animal sounds, but this really sounds like running water. I don't know of any animal that makes this noise unless they're going to the bathroom. So I stuck my head out of the tent and I see the tap dripping. And I think that, you know, that the handle had been manipulated a little bit. And I think that that jackal or whatever did this drained almost our entire tank. But It was just an interesting experience. It was, you know, an adventure, as Craig would say. But we were able to go to one of the towns and refill the water. And then go ahead.
Sorry, I just want to, before we continue, I just want to explain for those who are listening that the car, we rented a car with the rooftop tents and also fully kitted out with like all the camping equipment and everything. And it had a water tank in the car. And then there was a tap that was running kind of on like at the back of the car. So we could just refill. Oh, sorry, Craig.
Stop talking with your hands.
I just kicked Craig's microphone out of his hand. Yeah, there was a tap that went like to the back of the car, and there we could refill water and stuff. So the tap was like outside of the car, and that's how the jackal was able to kind of get that open, just to paint a picture for everyone about like how it was able to access the water. But yeah, continue then, Jackie. What were you going to say next?
The other one that stands out, and I think that it's a fan favorite for everyone, is the big storm that came through. We were, 100%. Yeah, Craig, without knowing, booked what would be our safe haven for that night. It was on the South African side at a campground that had a structured with a toilet and then like a little kitchen area.
Yeah, and, no soap, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's called a premium campsite where you have like your private bathroom structure.
I woke up to the rain fly whapping at the tent and thought, oh, this storm will pass. I'm just going to try to go back to sleep. And it continued and continued. And I did get a little frightened because the winds were so strong and sand was starting to blow across up to the level of our tent. So I yelled over to Charles for the car keys to unlock the car and sat in the car. And then we ended up going into the bathroom structure, hoping that this storm would pass, and it didn't. We waited for over an hour, and it just kept coming and coming. So I don't know if you, Charles, I imagine that's one of your highlights as well, or type two fun, as Carolina would say.
Oh, yeah, 100%. What woke me up was just like, it suddenly turned daylight in my tent. So like, I prefer to sleep like a particularly cool temperature. So I like hadn't put the rain fly on the tent or whatever. And I saw the storm coming and I was just like, oh no. And we like, so I like zipped up everything internally and like ended up being fine. If I'd stayed in the tent, like I think it would have been completely fine. Like as far as like getting wet inside the tent. But yeah, the winds were so strong, like at one point I remember like Craig and Caroline's tent like basically blowing away, and I'm just like, Caroline is trying to hold it and Craig's trying to like hammer this in, and I'm like, if I don't go help Carolina, that thing is actually going to blow away. Yeah. Carolina, I remember like holding onto the tent.
Yeah, there was a point where you and I were both like putting our weight behind this tent, and it was still almost ripping out of our hands.
So I think the main reason why it was blowing away was we made one of the most rookie errors you can as a camper, and we didn't nail in our ground tent pegs. So you get, for those of you who don't know, Craig. Me and Caroline.
Yeah. But to be honest, like, it's...
Hey, guys, I didn't put up my tent. Remember that day I was feeling sick? Come team.
We put her up that day. But still, we never put our pegs in because, and I don't think it's a rookie thing. I think it's just like we've never needed it, because if a storm comes through, it's not the winds that are the problem, it's the rain. So I've never in South Africa felt like I've needed the pegs, unless I've had the rain cover on, and then you need it for the rain cover, not the actual tent.
I mean, years ago when I went camping with my parents down on the Cape, like up the Eastern Cape and the Western Cape, the winds are normally quite severe down in that part of the country, and that's where you do need your pegs. But I mean, in the Kalahari National Park is the last place anyone will think about using pegs, but somehow Mother Nature proved us wrong.
Yeah.
Well, we weren't the only ones, because I remember I kept going outside while we were all huddling in the bathroom to like see where the storm was or whatever. And I could see every other campsite like lit up, like trying to hammer stuff in last minute. Yeah. So it was not just us.
And then there were also cars driving around. It was pretty chaos. Yeah, it was chaotic.
I spoke to a guy the next day, and he was staying with his wife in like one of the chalets, and then his son and his wife and their kids, they were camping, and he told me that the son and his wife had taken the kids into the car and driven it to the grandparents' house or the grandparents' cottage. And been like, okay, you guys take the kids and we'll handle the storm. So at least like we weren't the only ones that like panicked a little bit and felt like, okay, we need to get into a structure because this is actually quite a hectic storm.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, at least we weren't over exaggerating. And these guys were like very seasoned Kalahari goers. They went every year. So I felt good that they also panicked a bit.
Yeah, we could spend a fair amount of time with our like questionable 3 a.m. brain decision making. Like, I remember one thing, Greg and I were like looking at the rain fly on my tent, and like the wind was blowing so hard that we couldn't get it straight. And we just looked at each other and we're like, this isn't going to happen, is it?
No, just like, put it in the car. Just put it in the car.
Toss it in the back of the car, and we're like, screw it.
Yeah,
that was the funny thing. Sorry, Jackie, go ahead.
I was gonna say, I remember too, I'm sitting in the bathroom and I'm like, man, I packed my raincoat and I really could use it right now, but it's in the car. Maybe I should go get it. I'm like, oh my gosh, it's 12 in the morning. What are these thoughts?
Well, that was the thing. I think our first reaction was like, let's put on the rain covers. Like as if that's the actual priority right now. Like, you know, that was the thing. Cause you wake up in the middle of the night and you're like, what do I do? It's raining, it's gonna rain. Because at first the wind came through and then the rain came. So I was like, okay, let's put the rain covers on. And then you realize that the wind is so strong that there's no point of trying to put the rain covers on. And eventually, eventually we just closed everything up. Like the rooftop tents, we just closed them because we were like, let's just, you know, we have this, the ground tent and that is now safely pegged to the ground. And then let's just close the rooftop tents so that they don't break in the wind or something, and then we all just sat in the bathroom waiting for the storm to pass, and and that's when we actually started laughing at this whole situation.
Definitely a very, very, very entertaining evening.
I think the most memorable part for me was going to sleep in a tent on top of a truck and then waking up on a camping pad in the shower of this structure, because it was just, the storm was so bad, I thought, I'm just going to sleep in this bathroom. So that was an experience. And it's funny because I think not a few hours before we went to bed that night before the storm, Craig had randomly asked me, where's the craziest place you've ever slept? And I thought, I'm not like super adventurous when it comes to my sleep. And then, you know, not 12 hours later, I had a really great answer for him.
Yeah.
Welcome to Wildest Kruger Safaris, folks. We're trying to ask you the strangest questions.
But I think the thing is, though, like, the moral of this, because I have gotten questions on Instagram. People have been like, you know, can we book this trip with you guys and stuff? And I'm not going to say a complete no, but what I am going to say is, like, you need to be able to handle something like this. Yeah. You know, because this could have gone very wrong if we had guests with a different mindset who would have maybe been upset that, like, oh, the storm is coming through and, like, what do? We have to sit in the bathroom for a bit. Like, you know, that could have gone very south very quickly. So we're just grateful that you guys had such a great mindset and just felt like this became the best part of the trip.
Oh, yeah. And I do want to say, too, you know, we talk a lot about this structure. I think even if we had been, say, on the Botswana side where we don't have these structures, these premium campsites, we would have been fine. You know, we could have sat in the bar and we would have been fine. You guys were, you know, you guys kept us safe and we had fun.
We'd have just gone on a little game drive or something.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
Ooh, I would have loved a nighttime game drive. Yeah, that would have been great.
All right, guys, let's move on to sightings. We had some magnificent sightings through the duration of our time in Kalahari. I'm actually going to start with the black-headed heron smashing sociable weavers and red-billed quillias I think it's pronounced Kai Kai Waterhole. Anyone's more than happy to correct me if I'm wrong, any of our listeners, to lions walking on dunes, to cheetahs walking past the car, being in the frame with giraffes and wildebeest. I mean, so out of all of these amazing sightings, Jax, I think let's start with you. What was your ultimate favorite sighting? Are those crickets I hear?
The crickets.
It's okay to take it.
No, there's so many options. I think, you know, the cats are always a favorite for me. But, you know, I don't know. The simple things were nice, too. Just watching the weavers fly in and out of their nests. Certainly the heron killing those birds. That was insane. It would just, like, snatch them out of the air and smash them on a rock and swallow them whole. That was madness.
What was beyond me, sorry, Jax, to cut you off there, what was amazing was it just kept happening.
Yeah.
Like, we'd be like, oh, my word, he's got a bird. It's a bird. It's a bird. And then he would, one swallow, it would be gone, and be like, oh, my word, did we see? Oh, he's got another one. He's got another one. And, yeah, he just kept constantly going and going and going, which was remarkable. But, sorry, I cut you off there. Jax, go ahead.
That's okay. I don't know. I don't think I have just one. I think that the whole trip was great, which I know seems like such a generic answer, but it truly was. I'll think a little bit more. Maybe Charles' answer will give me some ideas.
Yeah. Well, I have my joke answer, which is seeing the wild spotted quack in the wild for the first time. So
that's an inside answer, joke, guys. That's Jackie.
I was expecting you to cut that out, actually. The real answer, so my favorite was probably the cheetah on, like, our last full day.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, we tracked her for so long. And, like, you know, we started out, she was right by the road. Like, some car, we were trying to figure out where she went. Some car pulled up and was just like, just drive. Like, the cheetah's in the road. And we're like, there's nowhere. So we drove ahead. Sure enough, cheetah's just walking down the middle of the road. And then she, like, goes up on a bluff and, like, you know, Craig gets us ahead, kind of anticipating where she's going to go. And we get into a really good position. And she does end up coming down the hill and crossing, like, directly in front of our car, which was so super cool. And, like, I had never seen a cheetah that close. And so that one was phenomenal. What else was particularly good? I think being able to sit with, like, all of the yellow mongoose in the camp at Rooiput's was actually, like,
stealing my own. Cool.
Sorry. You don't have a monopoly on those. But I'll let you go into the detail. And the other one that I thought was ridiculous was that one was at Palenque, not at Rooiput's. when we were staying at Royputz, first night at camping, and we came just down the road and saw the lions like on the dune. Hell of a spot by Craig. And then, you know, we just predicted it perfectly, and it was like perfect light, and like that was phenomenal as well. So
yeah, that lion sighting was insane. It was also because it was our first lions, I think. So we hadn't seen lions.
Yeah.
Very keen to see lions.
Like third day, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then, you know, just wake up, and we went out early, and literally outside camp, there they are on a dune, and then we could just wait for them to come down and cross the road, and it was just, yeah, magic. Absolute magic.
And there were tracks through camp, which was like super cool. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I think one of the other really cool sightings were the ostriches, just like
a
big group of ostriches.
Forgotten
and all that. Of a sudden, you know, we're watching them. Oh, there's, you know, little youngsters. And then all of a sudden, in synchrony, they just all start dancing or spinning or something. I don't even know the word for it. It was just wild.
Yeah, it was great. They started running first, and they just started running out of nowhere, and they just ran down the river, and we like driving next to them, well, not next to them, but kind of driving, wondering where are they going, like what are they running for, and they just all run this crazy speed, and then they just stop, and they just all start like doing this like it looked like the mating dance that the males do when they're mating with females, but these were youngsters, so there wasn't the mating dance. They just all started dancing, and like, you know, it was just so weird.
It was like three adults and like 20 some odd, like, you know, adolescents or whatever. It was wild.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Definitely the most amount of youngsters that we had seen together.
I looked back at my photos. I've gone through all my photos now, and I was looking at those photos, and I was like, I didn't manage to capture this because I was in just such shock. And I remember just saying, like, what is going on? Like, what are they doing? What's happening? Like, because I've just never seen anything like it. So I wasn't able to really capture like what I wish I would have captured because it was so crazy, because I was just in such shock of what was going on.
Yeah. I gave up and took a video, which was ruined by the amount of laughter that was going on.
Which is the theme
because we were all laughing.
Yeah, I think probably most of the videos have music now placed over them.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. Absolutely.
Yeah, but I think I want to talk about the yellow mongoose as well, because that is a top favorite of mine. We had at Polenswa, so one of the rustic camping sites in the middle of nowhere, or the most, I guess, the most in the middle of nowhere campsite that we did on the Botswanan side. There was this family of yellow mongoose that they had their like burrow, I guess you call it, under a bush right next to our campsite. So they were hanging around camp, and obviously because they live there and people come and stay there quite often, they were so relaxed with people. So you could really, we obviously didn't get too close because you still want to respect their like space and whatever. But you could get like quite the nice and close and get low angle shots, like lying on the ground, getting photos of these mongoose that, you know, you will never really get photos like that from a vehicle because it's always too high. So that for me was just really, really special. And I think those photos are probably some of my favorites from the trip by far.
Yeah, it was really cute just to watch them interact and kind of like just watch them look around and be on guard and, you know, play with each other. That was neat.
I found it very interesting watching the yellow mongoose and how they were actually spotting the birds of prey above the campsite that we could barely see. And only if I really had a good look and peeled my eyes, you could see some form of bird of prey circling. And this thing just looks straight up and just keeps looking at it. I found that incredibly interesting.
Yeah. One of my favorite photos from the trip is, I think Carolina, Jackie, and I had all kind of gotten down to get that low angle or whatever. And all of a sudden you hear Craig chuckling to himself because he's taken a picture of all three of us and just like freaking photographer.
Yeah. He's like, your legs look so funny.
Yeah. Because, like that. I think you guys, I had the wide angle on
your phone,
on my phone, and everyone looked so tall.
Yeah. But guys, we're not running short on time just yet, but I do want to make sure that we have enough time to talk about the Namibian part of the trip as well. should we just jump into that and you guys talk? Should we start with Charles? What was your favorite part of us traveling into Namibia?
Definitely Coleman's Cup. That was really cool, which is like the abandoned German mining town just outside of Lüderitz. And I am more of a landscape photographer than a wildlife photographer. And even though this is like architectural or whatever, it was super cool to me. And so I like had the team drop me off while they were doing some other activity, like the day before we'd arranged. And I bought like special tickets just to go in and like scout the place or whatever. And then the next morning we came just before dawn and got some, I think, pretty amazing photos. And like, I think Carolina had like a pretty good time too, which I was not expecting. I was expecting everyone to kind of be bored and just be dragging people along, but like everyone got into it. And that was really cool.
Even Craig with his iPhone 15.
Even yeah. Craig got really into it. You got some good artistic photos with that iPhone 15. I'm impressed.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank
I've you actually, too. I posted those photos because I was actually very happy with the results, which I was surprised about. So thank you, Charles, for pushing us with that. And I posted those photos now on Instagram. So if anyone wants to check it out, they can check it out. And I got so much great feedback and like, my dad, who's my biggest supporter, he's like, I need to print those and hang them up. And, you know, he's like, they're amazing. Nice. Yeah. Yeah. Nice. So I think it turned out to be really, really
so
cool.
I just want to give like our listeners a little bit of like an insight on like Charles, which I found was incredibly interesting. When you no.
On, yeah, where are we
just,
going?
Just no, easy tigers, easy. Is Charles, what I found fascinating about this Coleman's Cup experience was the day we dropped you off and the day before we all went and you went to scout it out. You went into every single building and scoped
true.
It out. That's dedication, mate. Sure.
Thanks, yeah. Now, like...
Well done.
So that's the part that's way different about landscape photography versus wildlife is like you can take your time and set things up and like wait for exactly the perfect light and all that kind of stuff. So you have to do all that preparation work.
Yeah.
Whereas wildlife, you just.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
Like how many buildings was it?
I think there's like 42 or something like that. There's like three that are off limits. And then there's the one main social house, but every other single building, I went in and went in every room and scouted it out. So
and these buildings are big. Like no, it was I was incredibly impressed. That was a like huge dedication.
But
see, hats off to you.
But that's the thing. I think it's interesting what you're saying about like the difference between wildlife and landscape photography because we've spoken about this a lot because you are like from the start a landscape photographer and I'm very much obviously a wildlife photographer. And we were talking about this when we were at Coleman's Cup and I was telling you that like that whole preparation and like that whole thing for me that's where I lose patience. Like I can't do the whole preparation, looking out for a certain spot and think, okay, where is the light going to hit? What am I going to do when the light is perfect? I'm more like I go out there and I capture what I see and I try to capture what I see the best way possible. So even when I do like, when I sometimes do portraits and stuff as well, I prefer doing like candid portraits and tell people like, just do your thing and then I'll capture whatever I can instead of being like, pose like this, pose like that, because I don't have that like visual mindset. I work in a way where I capture what I see rather than planning what I want to capture. And I think you, the opposite there, where you more like, I have this idea and I want to make it happen. And it's just so interesting that there's like, it's like two different types of photographers. And I just found it really, really interesting because we were talking about it a lot.
Yeah, very different style. I'm trying to learn from you though, is like be a little more in the moment, capture what you can get instead of like trying to plan everything to the nth degree. So
yeah, that's why I'm here.
Yeah, Charles comes on these trips with this file on his computer of photos that he'd like to capture. And I'm just like, I mean, if I see a lion pee, I'm excited, you know?
No, Jackie, you didn't even know where we were going half the time.
No, I didn't. I'm just like, you tell me what time, where to be, and I'm ready. Just Take and you're 5 minutes
late.
Whatever.
and Charles always stresses me out with these files or photos. And I'm like, Charles, I can't guarantee that this is going to happen. But I know
I would
that
love to get a cleaver tree. I would love to get a cleaver tree with the moon. Yeah. But the moon is not out when we're there. So I'm like, okay, Charles, what do you want me to do now?
But we know, we also know that you're not. We also know that you're not like guaranteeing it, but it's also like, it's more like, okay, if this opportunity presents itself, let's make it happen. But I'm always like, I can't guarantee anything, Charles. I can't say what the wildlife is gonna do.
But also in Charles's defense, he did know that. He understood.
Oh yeah, for sure. No, no, it's me that's panicking over nothing.
I did like your little file though. Like, it was like you're coming to Africa with your little CV going like, this is what I would like to see.
Yeah, yeah. That'd be great. Make it happen, Craig.
Yes. Make it snappy.
Okay. Enough about Charles. Jackie, what about you? What was your favorite part of Namibia?
Yeah, so I want to say, you know, the road trip across Namibia was great because, well, we saw a lot of nothing. So you take Kalahari and you're expecting to see nothing, and then you see less than nothing, and then you go to Namibia and you're like, I didn't even know that less than nothing was possible. So, you know, I think I took a couple naps in the car.
One or two, yeah?
Yes, you did.
One or two times seven. You know, I really enjoyed Coleman's Cup as well. I came home and started looking through my pictures and thought, man, I wish we had an extra day there because I would love to, you know, take some more. What just such a cool place. And then, of course, the penguins for me were one of my favorites. We took a boat ride off of the coast of Lüderitz and saw penguins, which were just really cute. I just like watching them walk and just interact with each other. And then I think just, you know, driving and seeing nothing and then all of a sudden stumbling across these towns and just seeing what that was like. You know, not a whole lot of culture in terms of our road trip across Namibia just because the population is concentrated in the north, but was nice to, you know, just see people. And I mean, we had been in the desert for 12 days and now we're like, oh my God, Namibia with their salads and Wi-Fi and other people. And so, you know, it was good. It was good.
Yeah, we went to the metropolitan of Lüderitz and we were like, wow, civilization.
Yeah,
exactly.
Like a town of like 3,000 people.
Yeah. But you know, what was also nice is that we were able to go on some hikes and the views were phenomenal.
That was cool.
Mm-hmm.
So I really enjoyed
the hikes were really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that was good. And I think, yeah, there was quite a lot of freedom with regards to what we could do in Namibia. And, you know, like I remember we went to the beach the one day and we're like, well, can't really photograph the dunes here. We're not far enough in. They're not big enough here. But let's just walk up this gigantic mountain. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
I think that was you, Craig, that just said, let's just walk. So the thing, no.
I thought it was
quite
cool.
Okay, let me tell the full story here for the listeners because Craig makes it sound like it was just like a little beach walk. No, it was a day we went, the afternoon. We were like, okay, what are we going to do for the afternoon? Let's go and explore this beach that Charles, you know, surprise, had researched out and found it was good for photography and had certain ideas for photos he would take.
When you say researched out, he went on Google Maps and looked at all the aerial view to see where the best place would be to photograph.
I was trying to find a shipwreck and there was one that was like half pixelated on Google Maps. So I wanted to go try and find it.
Yeah. That had washed away like 2 years ago.
Exactly. So anyway, we go to this beach, which was really cool. Like the beach was beautiful and like it looked really, really cool. And, you know, it was around sunset and I was like, oh, this is going to be cool. But then we opened the car doors and they closed again because the wind was so strong. And we were like, there's no way I'm going out there in this wind because it's just, I'm literally going to fly away. And Charles was like, no, but I have researched this beach. I'm still going to go out there. And we were like, okay, cool, Charles, you go. So Charles went out on his little mission. And he photographed some.
He wasn't
cool
gone
stuff.
For long.
No. I'm just saying, little mission. That's why I said little.
Okay.
He got some cool photos. I have to say, you did get some cool photos, so it was worth it. And then you came back, and Craig was like, "Let's just drive around." And then Craig saw this big rock, and Craig was like, "Let's climb it." So now we're getting out in this.
To be clear,
wind.
Craig drove 150 meters, saw the rock, and just went squirrel.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's go.
I also think I was really excited to be driving the 4x4 in that moment. So he drove a little bit of this giant rock to start. So we're like,
and then he realized.
So now the doors are closing because we're on a slant, not because it's windy.
And he realized, oh wait, I can't drive all the way up because this car is like super top heavy. So you can't actually do proper 4x4ing because you've got all the camping gear and the rooftop tents and everything.
Especially up a mountain.
Yeah, so you can't like actually go proper 4x4 because we're going to roll the car. So Craig stops halfway up the mountain and he's like, okay, let's climb the last bit. And we're like, okay, let's just do that. And then we climbed up this rock in the wind.
Did you guys or did you not have fun?
We had a lot of fun. That's what we're saying. Thank it was you. Type 2 fun.
Sounds like you're judging me.
But it was really cool. And I think that was the cool thing. The cool thing about Namibia, though, was that we just found these like random adventures that we just went on. And like, you know, when we were in Fish River Canyon, we were like, okay, there is a hike around the lodge and whatever that we can do. We have no idea how far it is, but let's just go. And it ended up being like 2 hours or something, and we ended up seeing this cave that was really cool and beautiful views, and we were just all the way up like climbing this mountain, and it was just such an adventure. And it was, you know, you just go on these random excursions and it ends up being a lot cooler than you ever could have imagined.
Yeah, it, you know, that lodge sticks out of my mind in particular too, because I think that was one of my favorite nights in Namibia. We went on a little drive with the lodge and had let them know we wanted to photograph the stars. So first we went looking for scorpions with blue lights, which was really cool, and then drove even further into the nothingness and just set up and photographed the Milky Way. And it was a great night.
And the Kriva tree, very important.
Craig found me my Kriva tree, and I appreciate it.
Found the Kriva tree.
Well, the funny thing about the stars as well was that, like, the whole time in Kalahari, we have been saying, like, the stars are beautiful and, like, oh, this is a really cool place to do stars. But the moon was wrong, so we didn't really do any stars in Kalahari because we had to wake up a lot earlier. And then, like, Charles was mapping out, there was a very small window and everything. So we ended up not doing stars, and we always kept on saying, no, but in Fish River Canyon, then we're doing stars. Fish River Canyon, which was at the very end of the trip. And we were like, that's when the moon is going to be better, and we're going to do stars in Fish River Canyon. And then the first night we get to Fish River Canyon, it's overcast. And we're like, no, there's no stars. We can't do stars. We've banked this whole trip on doing stars in Fish River Canyon, and now the weather isn't playing along. And then luckily the next day it was clear and we actually got our stars. So I was very, very happy that we finally got it.
So what did everyone think about Akravis Falls?
It was cool. It's a little tough photographically, though, because like you're on these platforms that it's kind of like tough to compose like a full thing. And then we're like, oh, that's cool. You know, we'll like wait till after dark or whatever and like get the Milky Way. And like that'll be kind of the interesting part of the composition. And then like we went down after dinner and they had this light that just like barely shined on the waterfall, but it was enough to like completely ruin it. And so we just started like messing around and like getting, you know, like our silhouettes with like the Milky Way in the background. And that ended up being like super fun. But like, and then the next day we went out and did like a mini game drive. And I thought like the park was just the falls, but no, it's like big and it's really cool. Like, you know, I think that's like an underrated gem for sure.
100%. We were chatting about it in the car while we were driving around. I mean, the scenery where we stopped for lunch that last day, that was one of the most beautiful parts of the trip. Just that gorge where we could just get out and make lunch.
Yeah, so the cool thing about Akrabis, for those who don't know, Akrabis is kind of just south of Kalahari, kind of, just to explain it easy. It's about an hour away from Upington. And the very cool thing about Akrabis is that there's no really dangerous animals there. So you are allowed to get out of your car, which you're not allowed in any other national parks in South Africa. You're not allowed to like just leave your car and start walking. But in Akrabis, you're allowed to because, well, sorry, just side note, maybe in other national parks you are allowed to. But in Kruger and in Kalahari, you're not allowed to because there's dangerous animals. but in the Harbis you're allowed to, so you could just kind of like park your car, and then we saw cool spots. We could just walk a bit into, like, I was gonna say the bush, but it's not really the bush, the desert. And that's a really cool thing for me, I think, because most of the time when you're in these national parks, you're kind of subject to your car. And then we found this really cool view spot that Craig is talking about, where we had lunch. That was just this view over a beautiful lake. And I felt like that was something I've never really seen in South Africa before, some like that kind of view. So that was really, really cool for me as well.
Yeah, that was a beautiful, beautiful place. Really nice view.
I think
the we haven't mentioned the freeze-dried meals yet.
Ooh.
Which we polished up.
That's right.
Yeah.
That is true. Should we talk about segue. Talk about the food. What did we eat? Tell us.
Yeah, what's your
Oh my gosh.
What didn't we eat? Yeah, Jack.
We didn't eat any salads in the Kalahari, which me as a vegetarian, I was, you know, very much looking forward to those in Namibia. I think that was my first meal out there. No, but we had a...
Wait, Jackie. I just have to say, when we arrived to the first hotel in Namibia, not having spent time with like around civilization for like 2 weeks, you and me, Jackie, went to the buffet and we saw salad and I just screamed out loud, "Salad!" And then I realized, wait, I have to be normal around people.
I'm in public now. And we hadn't done laundry in, I mean, how many days? And we're just like crawling to this lodge restaurant in our safari clothes covered in dust and dirt. And, you know, thank goodness for understanding people.
let's talk about, with regards to the food, Jackie, you're obviously, those of you who don't know, Jackie is a vegetarian. And we did do freeze-dried meals through the leg of both Namibia and Kalahari over the 2.5, just under 3 weeks. How did you find that? How did you find the meals, Jackie?
They were delicious and so easy. I mean, yours were easy as well. Just boil water, pour it in, wait 5 to 10 minutes, and you have a meal. They were really good. A lot of calories, a lot of protein in those meals. And let's see, we had mushroom risotto, we had some eggplant options, some mixed vegetable options, couscous. It was great.
Nice. So you think as a vegetarian, you'd recommend those meals going forward to anyone that was going to do 100%. Something like this?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Charles, I wouldn't be surprised if Jackie orders some for home. So
yeah.
Who's to say I'm ready? No, I'm just kidding. I haven't yet, but it's a good idea.
So yeah, the food for me, like, I'm lucky, I'm a very unfussy eater. But we also had freeze-dried meals, and those were like phenomenal to, like, particularly after long day drives, and you don't want to go back and like, particularly when you're camping out, you don't want to fuss with making dinner and everything. So it was so easy just to boil some water, and like, they were delicious, like better than a lot of other freeze-dried meals that I've had. So I was pretty darn happy with that. Nice job, Craig.
I was very, very, very impressed with how much flavor they had. They were so flavorful, right?
Yeah, they were.
Obviously,
they were...
the presentation, because it is, you know, it kind of turns into like a little mush, because you can't really, it's not like you get a piece of chicken and rice on the side. You get like
mush
of rice and chicken. But so it doesn't look very appealing when you like look down the bag, but it tastes absolutely amazing. So that I also felt like that was really good. And also, like, on Jackie's note about salads and vegetables and stuff, it's very difficult to like get fresh vegetables and stuff when you're out in the middle of the desert, so you kind of feel like you're struggling with nutrients and stuff. And these freeze-dried meals were like so packed with nutrients that I feel like that really helped us like still have it like a balanced meal and not just eat crap the whole time.
Yeah, but we still ate a lot of crap.
I was on a mission to try the different flavor chips. So that was part of my diet as well. And then we had nuts and we had dried fruit, and you know, we had we'd stop and make like a grilled cheese sandwich in the early afternoon, and we had peanut butter and just peanut butter and bread. I think we did very well with the meals. You guys bride a couple nights, and we were able to make rice, and it was good.
Yeah, it's nice. And I did discover Jackie's fascination with pasta.
I love pasta.
We did pasta quite a few nights. We ended up going on this rotation because Jackie really wanted pasta. So every other night we did pasta, and every other night we were bride.
I remember quite clearly the one day we were at one of the shops and we had had pasta the night before, and we were getting a few supplies at the shop, and I remember being in the fridge, and all I remember turning around was Jackie standing there with a bag of pasta with her eyes lit up, just looking at me like a child that wants a toy in a toy store. Hey, can we have pasta? And I was like, tomorrow night, Jackie. We know we've got a plan. So that was also quite a funny moment for me.
Yeah. Guys, before we wrap up, because I think it's about time to start wrapping up soon. Obviously, you guys have been very much bit by the safari bug, and you know, now you've gotten back to the States. How's that been? And when are you coming back to Africa next? What's the next travel plans?
2025. Sorry, I forgot what year we're in right now.
2015. Yeah.
2025. Definitely on the calendar there. It's good. It's good being home. I certainly missed family and friends. Going back to what Charles said about being off the grid, you know, I kind of wish I was off the grid a little bit more here, but I guess that's just the way, things go. I definitely miss the camping and being out in nature all the time and laughing with everyone. Looking forward to another great trip with you.
Yeah, so similar for me is like, getting home is, there's always some post-safari blues. So, you know, that's getting back into work and all that kind of stuff is, it takes a minute for sure. Next time I think it's 2025, planning to do another trip with Wildest Kruger Safaris. We can, I can always be talked into a last minute trip into Kruger some way, somehow. So
trust me, I know you can, Charles. I know you can.
Working on the pitch right now.
I don't think you need to make much of a pitch. Just say,
Charles, we have a spot. Okay.
just one message. Charles, Kruger, dates. Here we go.
I'm hoping one day it gets to a point. I'm going to be like, Charles, there's a leopard with a kill in a tree. She's probably going to be there for about 4 days. If you fly now, you could probably catch her on the last day.
I was working on this since I've been back. Is like, because I'm very lucky that I live in New York City and there's a direct flight to Johannesburg, I can be in like 24 hours leaving my apartment to being in a safari vehicle. So
yeah, I know. That's amazing.
This thing that Craig is saying about a leopard in a tree, like that does come from a real story. There was a guy that loved one specific leopard so much in the Sabi Sands that the lodge would like let him know when that leopard was on a kill, and he would fly from Germany to come and see that leopard. It comes from a real story.
Wow.
You can be that guy, Charles.
I'm not quite to that level.
Not yet.
Still on the subscription plan.
But yeah, guys, if you guys don't mind, I'm going to fill our listeners in as to what we have planned for 2025.
Oh, yes.
We are planning with Charles and Jackie, and obviously Carolina, because there's no trip that doesn't include Carolina. She's...
Well, how do you make that sound like such a negative?
What? It wasn't. You see, you took it that way.
We have to bring Carolina along.
Yeah, we have to.
We can hang out.
Thanks, Jackie. Can we share a room?
Yeah, probably. With the bat again, I hope.
We haven't told that story.
But anyway, Carolina will definitely be joining, and we're excited about it.
It sounds like it.
But we have got planned. We are going to be doing the Eastern Botswana, Southern Zambia, and the western side of Zimbabwe. We're going to be conquering three nations in 2025. We're looking at visiting Chobe National Park for a good amount of days, the Livingstone area for a good amount of days, and then Wangi National Park itself.
More camping, more laughs, more fun.
Less bats, I hope.
Less bats.
Less bats. Less bats. Yeah, we didn't tell that.
For those who are wondering, that we woke up in the middle of the night of a bat in our room and had to try to get it out. Yeah, and it was a bit chaotic.
I remember coming into the room the next morning and seeing tape in the corners where you thought they were crawling out. That was good. Good use of the duct tape. Well done.
Yeah. I packed it not knowing what I'd need it for. I didn't suspect I'd need it to keep a bat out of our tent, but it came in handy.
I definitely more duct tape next time. That was useful.
Yeah, was definitely useful. My super glue was not.
Yeah, less super glue.
Less super glue, more duct tape.
But guys, I think we're going to need to wrap it up there. But thank you so much for joining us and being part of the podcast. It was very fun to hear like your side of the story. And I hope that the listeners enjoyed it as well. And for those who are listening, we will be back soon, hopefully, with another podcast episode. Thank you for listening.
And Charles and Jackie, thank you for becoming part of the Wildest Kruger family.
Oh, thank you. Well, thanks for keeping us alive.
Thank you all for being the people you are and being such wonderful travel companions and, all the laughs. Guys. All the laughs and good times and love. So,
thanks so much, guys. Honestly, it's been absolutely amazing having this chat with you, reminiscing and everything. And I'm sure we'll chat again soon.
All right.
Can't wait.
Perfect, guys.
See you all soon. Bye.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye.